United Lutheran Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast, conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more, with voices from around the corner and around the globe.
Welcome to the Seminary Explores. My name is Nelson Strobert, and today my guest is Dr. Richard Stewart, Associate Professor Emeritus of the United Lutheran Seminary. Welcome to the Seminary Explorers again.
Thank you, Dr. Strobert.
The reason I wanted to have this conversation is that I heard that you received a grant, and I'd like for you to share what is the nature of that grant and from whom the grant was given.
Well, the nature of the grant is to work on documenting the history of African-American Lutherans. And initially, I perceived this as a group project and applied to the Louisville Institute for a grant for a group project, and they rejected it. And they said, this is more like an independent research project. Well, my independent research project is to document the history of African-American Lutherans in the United States. And the grant was given 3 years ago, to do that. And my goal is to put together a website so that the information that I gather is publicly available. Now, the grant does not cover me in terms of a team, but what I'm doing is recruiting people to give me oral interviews and personal histories. And I've been doing obituary diving to find out the histories of people who are no longer with us, to get their stories and put those online as possible, either by written form or by oral form.
Okay, well, that sounds like there are lots of pieces to this and a lot of people involved. How did you come across, or how did you find the names of the people to interview and to hear their stories?
Well, it's by a matter of attrition. Back in 1974 or 75, I was approached by Grover Wright, who then was an executive with the Lutheran Church in America in recruitment of pastors to be, African-American pastors to be parts of the church. And he said, could you do a history? And I said, why don't you contact these people? And I gave him a whole list of folks who were in academia. And he said, well, I've all asked them all, and they all said no. So being young, and at that point, 3 years ordained, new in the ministry, just starting a position as a campus pastor at Central State University, I said, well, let me give it a shot. And turned in my first report in 1987, just prior to the beginnings of the ELCA. And that material in its written form was used by the church for a number of purposes. Mm-hmm. And then after the new church was formed, I received all the materials back. So they sat in my house for a while, and I began to think, okay, this is a project that needs to have some long-term effect. And I've been collecting materials over time from a number of people. The last one that was a major dump in my house was Jim Gunther, a pastor who had been in Transfiguration Church in New York City in Harlem. He began to give me boxes of his material after he retired. And I learned pretty quickly in reading the material he had been an emissary of Franklin Clark Fry, who had been a long-term second president of the United Lutheran Church in America. To anything that had to do with National Council of Negro Churchmen, or Lutheran clergy in Africa, or Lutheran clergy in Brazil and South America. And those materials came at me box by box as Jim kind of gave them away. About the same time that he was moving toward ill health, that's when I began to approach organizations to say, okay, I need some funding to help do this project. And that's where I approached the Louisville Institute as a group project, which they rejected. Mm-hmm. And then secondarily, they said, well, apply for it as an individual research project. And that came a little over 3 years ago, and that's when I got kind of totally immersed in this, and my wife said, when am I going to see you next?
Okay, which meant that it took off.
The project took off. I looked at it in two ways. One is to put together a timeline, and that is about 90% complete. There's about a 10-year gap between 1947 and 1968-69 that I'm trying to fill in, because there are three major church bodies in the Lutheran Church: the Wisconsin Synod, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and the ELCA and its predecessor bodies, the American Lutheran Church and the Lutheran Church in America. And there were a number of efforts to talk about what was ministry to the African-American community right. like at that time. And it goes through a lot of different trials and errors. And so that's the hardest part that I'm working on now in terms of physical documentation, reading records, and minutes of meetings. But I also considered there are a number of lived stories that needed to be documented. So I began to think through who were my elders. Now, granted, at this point, I'm 74 going on 75. So I was talking about people who were in the generation before me. And if I remember correctly or have researched correctly, I was number 17 in the Lutheran Church in America. And okay. it hit me hard about 2 years ago, 3 years ago, when I saw an obituary for a pastor who came out of the ALC, Haraday. Pastor Haraday had been ordained in 1971, my same year. Mm-hmm. He was ordained in the American Lutheran Church out of Luther Seminary. And I was ordained in 1971 out of Hamlet School of Theology. We never met one another.
Right.
We never talked with one another. And so in one sense, the whole issue of the three separate church bodies that now make up the ELCA and auxiliary to that, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, we've never cross-fertilized enough to know each other's histories. So that's where I began to think through the process of how do I interview those who are still living?
Right. And my question is, how did you find the people to interview?
Well, actually, I started out with one of the youngest pastors. One of my first advisees has been in the same congregation in New Jersey for 28 years. And so that was one of my first interviews, to try to get my feet on the ground.
Right.
But then as I did some of the interviews, I said, okay, let me start moving into the elders. And that became an interesting trip three summers ago, when I interviewed about seven pastors from Washington State, a brigadier general in the National Guard, one of the pastors I first met when I was a Luther Leaguer in 1962, Lee
that
Wesley.
That was a long time ago.
Some of the people who were instrumental in bringing black pastors into Minnesota, a lay person in Minneapolis. And I've documented those interviews on video, or mostly on audio tape, and they're currently housed on my blog so that you can hear people in their own language talking about several questions about why they became Lutheran, what activities they took part in the church, and what that means for the church today.
So you had a standard repertoire of
about,
questions.
About 6-7 questions that I kind of repeated. Didn't matter whether it was lay or clergy, as to what were their spiritual developments about and how that ended up being, you know, housed in the Lutheran okay. church. And so the number of interviews has increased. But all along the way, I've had some of my elders die. And that was right. been one of the harder parts. And so the other part of that process is digging into obituaries. And so I've been obituary diving for the last year to cover names that I can remember as a part of my history and history before me of people who preceded me, especially those who were active in the 50s and 60s.
Okay. And what I find interesting is that you mentioned you interviewed lay and clergy.
Correct.
Yeah. Now, was that by accident or that had you originally thought only clergy?
Initially, I think I was thinking only clergy, but then I started thinking about the number of people who were instrumental in the number of pastors who then became Lutheran. For instance, one of the elders that I could not interview, who was already deceased, was Grover Wright. He became a recruiter for the church about the time I entered seminary. And I can remember one day he was saying, well, I'm recruiting folks for being in the ministry. I said, well, you don't have to recruit me. I'm already here. He said, well, my job is not to recruit you. It's to encourage others to join you.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were a number of people like that. And that became a part of the obituary dying of people like Grover and his wife, who were instrumental in terms of the development of a number of people into the pastorate.
Right, I remember him, yeah.
Winston Bone was one of the mentors for folks in Metro New York.
Yes, I remember him as well.
And I went looking for him, and I had four addresses for him in Blair, Washington, and he was not at any of them. And I had a videotape of him and his 50th anniversary of ordination. I went to the church, and the people were doing a Bible study. I said, excuse me for bothering you, but I'm looking for Winston Bone. Mm-hmm. Now, everyone in the room was white, and they said, so are we.
Okay.
Because he had been there earlier in the spring, but mm-hmm. he had sort of disappeared. And they thought he had gone back to Bellevue, Washington with his daughter.
Right.
And I did not have an address for her, phone number for her, and didn't know what her married name was. Another pastor, Victor Langford, who was in Seattle, Washington, who I did interview, and was also the first Brigadier General in the Chaplain's Corps of the National Guard, and an African American, said, well, he thought he'd move back to New York. And the reality was, 2 weeks later, his daughter put out a notification that he had died in Bellevue, Washington.
Oh.
I was 30 minutes away from him and could not get the interview.
Oh, my.
The irony is, when I started this project in 1974-5, he was the only person to write me back a response.
Wow.
And I still had that in the files.
Oh, good. And that will come in handy now.
So that's a piece of the puzzle that I'm trying to put together.
Okay. As you were talking, it dawned on me, from these interviews, as you've been hearing these stories, what in these conversations, is there anything that has surprised you?
I'm not certain it was a surprise, but people have been able to share in depth both the joys of ministry, but also some of the deep, dark crevices of ministry that have not been unpainful.
Could you share?
That in a double negative.
Right, exactly.
Because there is pain involved, and yet they continue to serve and persevere. There's been a consistent piece in almost every interview of some pain and a lot of joy. The joy is in serving the church, but the process of doing that in a church that has had a welcome mat out for people of different traditions. And that's not just to say African Americans, it also probably involves those who come from other lands, who are
exactly.
from the African continent and other places, but also then put up difficulties, not necessarily barriers sometimes, but challenges that are different than they give to other candidates for ministry.
Oh, okay. I'm sure that, as you heard that, I'm sure you could not help but reflect on your own experience
Precisely.
In ministry. And again, that would be another difficult part in this process, in this interviewing process.
Well, the interesting part is, those who have come into the church without a Lutheran background essentially knew some of the challenges they would be facing, and so they tried to work through them. And then there are people like me who grew up in the church.
Right.
Who faced some challenges, but we also, because we were growing up in the context of the church, either consciously or unconsciously knew we had some protectors who kept from some of the deep, dark issues from confronting us in a face-to-face way. And yet, historically, ultimately, we end up knowing that we were protected because those issues then did surface in other kinds of ways later.
Right. Right. You mentioned that you have your blog, and people can listen and to those to those stories. And if you would, could you just share the address of your blog?
Sure. R.N. Stewart, Stewart, at
blogs.
There's no at. rnstewart.blogspot.com.
Okay, good. I'll have you repeat that at the end, but because I've listened to some of these stories and they're fascinating, and especially for some of the people that I thought I knew or their stories, and I really hadn't. So they can listen to it on your blog, but are there other places that you hope that this material, these voices, these soundtracks, would be able to be heard or read through a larger audience?
Ultimately, we're looking to put this on a website. And we're still playing with whether or not we want to use a website that I own, which is Conference of International Black Lusendors, Cibl, C-I-B-L, .us.org. Or to get a new website that's talking about African-American Lutheran history. So there's a kind of a conundrum there, and that's something to be worked out in the next 6 months. The other is to find longevity for it, since I'm now 75, or soon will be 75, to make sure that the blog and the website stay up for as long as possible, which means some future planning for historical preservation. So those are the kinds of issues I'm facing now and finishing up the timeline.
Right.
So there will be the hard copy of the timeline. There will be stories that I have that are audio. There will be stories that I have documented through obituaries of people who have predeceased us. And one other place is that during the month of February, I try to do an introduction per day of a Black Lutheran, and I wanted to start with Earline Miller, who was the first Black ordained woman. Well, somebody else posted it about 10:30 on on January 31st, and I didn't get the first one up. And so I got stunned by saying, okay, it's there already. What do I do now? And I thought, well, I got 28 people I can put up with, no problem.
Right.
I wonder if I can do 28 women. And so for Facebook for the year 2019, I put up a face a month, or face a day, of someone who was female in character or were females who had a particular office. And some of them were lay people, some of them were clergy. One of the surprising things for me was to finding out that three synods, their first vice president under the ELCA, were Black females.
Hmm.
One of the synods, New Jersey, is currently the current vice president, is the grandson of the first vice president.
Wow. Oh. There's a tradition there.
Yes, definitely a tradition. Or three of the four vice presidents for the Southeastern Pennsylvania Synod have all been Black females, but all four have been females. There's this kind of interesting dichotomy about the church and the way in which we pick leaders that's kind of interesting and both informing. And one other piece was that one of the other vice presidents was Alice Carter, who came to the church as the spouse of an AME clergyman in Western Pennsylvania.
AME, who then converted, transferred
became a pastor in the ELC, then the LCA.
Right.
But here this woman is, the wife of this former AME pastor, who becomes the vice president of the synod. But she was also an executive for the Urban League in Pittsburgh.
Exactly. Yeah.
Interesting stories about intriguing people, and some of those are written stories now in short form, but we'll do some expanding of those stories as we've gone through obituaries and other things to capture some history of people who have gone before us and who are no longer with us.
Right. And hopefully next February you'll do another post another series.
Oh, geez, thanks for the invitation to be a performance artist at midnight every day.
Right, exactly. But I'll tell the listening audience that I followed postings each day, and I found it just fascinating to read some of the snippets or the small pieces of information that you were able to share with those of us who are on Facebook.
The other piece is that I have to report to the Louisville Institute in March of 2020. So that's when the final report for the grant will be done, and we'll figure out how we plan to make sure this all gets maintained into the future.
Very good, very good. And I guess for my last question is, what do you see as the outcome of this project for you and for the ELCA and for persons of color?
Well, my hope is it's broader than the ELCA, that we are still working on input from the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod and interviews there. I've got one history of one particular parish where 9 Lutheran Church Missouri Synod pastors came out of the congregation. 2 of them are women who serve in the ELCA, right. One of whom is now 102.
That's right, you're right.
So we crossed denominational lines, especially when it came to the kind of separate instructions we have about who can and who cannot be ordained. But that needs to be a part of the history of how people of African descent have been served by the church in this country over the period of time from 1666, when Emmanuel was baptized on Palm Sunday in New York City, to today.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I'm going to thank you for sharing your research, your traveling, and your conversations with clergy and lay of color in our Lutheran Church, and for those of you who would like to hear some of these stories, I will ask Dr. Stewart to repeat his blog address.
rnstewart, that's STEWART, .blogspot, BLOGSPOT, .com.
Okay. Thank you so much for sharing your research with the listening audience.
You're welcome.
For the Seminary Explorers, this is Nelson Strobert. I've been talking with Dr. Richard Stewart, Associate Professor Emeritus from United Lutheran Seminary. Have a good day.
You have been listening to The Seminary Explorers, a production of United Lutheran Seminary with campuses in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We invite you to visit our website at unitedlutheranseminary.edu. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of United Lutheran Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.